on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
One of the end zone caught. Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome into Big Blue Kickoff Live. Anita Marks here with Roman Oben. It means it is hump day. It is a Wednesday. That's when we come your way here on Giants.com. And we welcome you in. And it's an exciting week because the Giants won.
I know, right? Oh, my God.
63 days.
Was it?
It had gone until the Giants won. So thank goodness. And a really impressive victory against the Tennessee Titans, 36-7. And now a team that's preparing for the Washington Redskins, who are dealing with a lot of issues of their own. So I'm actually quite excited about this matchup coming up on Sunday. But first and foremost, as always, Roman, we look back before we look forward. As always, this is our first chance to talk about the game and so many things to talk about, especially the young rookies that have really stepped up now. Andre Williams, of course, really stepping in and really filling that void of an injured Rashad Jennings. Even though Rashad Jennings was active, because the Giants got such an early lead, I think they were able to just stick with Andre Williams, which was great. And, of course, Odell Beckham Jr. yet again having just a phenomenal game. So you've really got to commend the rookies this game and of course keeping that lead 36-7 the final.
Yeah, and then you have to mention also that Devin Kennard was the NFC Defensive Player of the Week. I mean, he's had 4 sacks in the last 2 weeks. He's finally becoming, this kid always had a lot of confidence. And I go back to training camp with Devin Kennard, and he was the guy that was going full speed on drills that weren't full speed, and they had to tell him to kind of choke it down a little bit. And I think in this age of, they think football players are softer and they're more athletic, but they're not as good football players and they don't practice as hard as they used to. And I mean, this guy could have played in the 80s, 90s, 70s. And he has a lot of confidence again, but he's showing it now. To have productivity with that confidence, as a young player, it's very important to let the fans know that some guys, everybody's not going to be a stud out the gate. Some guys need to develop. Some guys need a chance. Some guys don't play until someone gets injured. So going back to this time last week, when you had 5 people put on IR in one day, Coach Coughlin said, listen, these young guys have an opportunity. Curry Winn last week had a sack, and again, but what Andre Williams did last week, first 100-yard, had a 50-yard run. As an offensive lineman, I appreciate a 50-yard run because that's the difference between, 20 carries for 60 yards and 21 carries for, 110 yards or whatever. And again, Odell Beckham, obviously chasing Jeremy Shockey. Odell Beckham right now, I think, is a 59 catches for 129 yards in just 9 games. And what Jeremy Shockey did, still as a tight end, was still very impressive. Again, a tight end, 74 catches, I think, 879 yards or something like that. But Odell Beckham being a receiver, I mean, you go from getting better every week to now there's argument on national shows that can he be up for a Rookie of the Year? Because of what he's done in the last month and a half or so. But, again, I'm very proud of these guys just taking the opportunity. And you can talk about the fact that, this team could be 7-6. If you don't lose the Jacksonville game, but that abomination that happened there, giving up 14 points, you find a way to beat Dallas and San Francisco, which this team had a chance to win, you're talking about a 7-6 football team with the injuries, with all the stuff, versus the other half of the conversations that I've been having about job security and who's going to be here next year and all that stuff. But again, Anita, just one thing that a win does in terms of team morality, locker room morality, organizational morality, morale, all those things are good.
I understood what you were saying.
Good for a team. And it's another divisional game. The Giants have dropped 3 in the division, 2 to Dallas, 1 in Philadelphia, that 27-zip game. And they have a chance to at least continue to – you can't right the ship unless you go back 5 weeks and change the record. But you can definitely fix some of the woes and kind of cure some of the bleeding by winning a team that now I think they have the confidence to say, based on what we've done the last 2 weeks, we've got some kind of momentum going forward against a divisional opponent.
Absolutely. Washington sitting at 3-10. The Giants now at 4-9, and some big question marks going into this Washington game about who's going to be the starting quarterback. Colt McCoy suffered a neck injury, so we know that that is Jay Gruden's quarterback of choice. For whatever reason, he's just not a big RG3
fan.
It's
like the lesser of three evils, I think.
So now don't know, you know, is if Colt McCoy is physically able to play, he will be the starting quarterback. If not, RG3 feels that he will be. I'm sure Dan Snyder, the owner, wants him to be. But yesterday, Jay Gruden came out and said, well, hey, I'd kind of like to see Kirk Cousins again. So just don't know who the starting quarterback's going to be heading into this matchup against the New York Football Giants. You know, very, very interesting dynamic what's happening there.
Yeah, and I know Jay Gruden very well. You know, he was a Louisville guy, and he was a couple years ahead of me. He left right before I came in. But
played in the Arena League. Folks aren't aware. That was an excellent quarterback in the Arena League. I love the stories that John Gruden talks about him and says John Gruden always tried to aspire to be the athlete his brother was.
Yeah.
And never always worked out harder, put in more time studying, preparation, this and that, and you just can't beat athleticism, and said that, you know, he just that Jay was always the better athlete than John.
Yeah, and Jay was you know, little brother was about 6'3", and then John Gruden's about 5'8", so sometimes that has a lot to do with that. You can't help the genes, and obviously, you know, I think their dad was a long time pro personnel in the NFL for many years. But again, I think knowing who Jay Gruden is and what the issues that he's dealing with at that quarterback position, you know that he only likes quarterbacks that are sharp mentally. They're great in the classroom, just like his brother. They do every single thing possible, come in early, leave late, off the field to get it done. And, you know, the things you heard about RG3 a few weeks ago, Anita, as you know, that he wasn't that guy off the field. Now, whether he's leaving the facilities at 5 when everybody else is going home or he's staying there. Now, the rehab portion of it, getting back to physical shape, he's done a great job. But you're starting to hear things about what happened to him mentally. He's not as sharp, that he was a systems guy coming out of college. And Shanahan really protected him with that Denver, you know, zone run action pass offense that was good for an athletic quarterback. But he got battered with injuries, came back and played that 13 season when he really shouldn't have, opening day. And I think it affected his confidence. Every time you see RG3 coming out of the pocket, he just seems like a different guy. He was never that guy in college. He was, again, a systems guy. The irony, I think he'd be great in Chip Kelly's offense in Philadelphia.
Let me ask you this, and please, again, I know we've got a few callers on. We're going to get to you in a hot second. 201-939-4513 is the phone number you want to get in on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Also, I'm monitoring Twitter throughout the show, at Giants, hashtag Giants Chat. I will share those tweets with all our viewers here. But really quick, before we do head out to the phone lines, I'm just curious, have you ever played on a team where the ownership in the suits – wanted a certain quarterback to be at the helm, but then a head coach preferred another quarterback. And I know you played on San Diego. Were you there when the whole Phillip Rivers?
Yes,
Drew
I was.
Brees
I was there.
Thing went
I
down?
Was there for. I was there for the Rivers Brees drama. I know Marty Schottenheimer wanted Drew Brees. Drew Brees got injured, hurt his shoulder. A linebacker, I think Lynch. You know, somebody beat Antonio Gates around the corner. Marty Schottenheimer wanted Drew Brees, and then the GM wanted Phil Rivers. I was also there in Cleveland. If you remember the Tim Couch, Kelly Holcomb controversy, I was there early stages of that. Kelly Holcomb was, you know, a guy who bounced around the league, older guy. You know, he was a guy that was really smart, and then Tim Couch was the first pick overall. I don't know if you remember that, but that was another quarterback controversy. I was around for both of those things, and it was it's tough because it's like, what's better for the locker room and the cohesion in the locker room, or what's better for the organization in terms of what they perceive as moving forward? And sometimes, even in any company, people in marketing make decisions on what doesn't necessarily has to affect what's called the end user, the person who actually uses the product or whatever. But again, this is football, not marketing or a corporation. But in terms of organizations, I mean, you got to be on the same page, and the quarterback is the face of the organization, and you've got issues at quarterback position. I mean, Giants fans are lucky, you know, right? However you feel about Eli Manning, he's won 2 Super Bowls. You haven't had to worry about the quarterback position for a decade. And, you know, with his 169 game winning streak, starting streak, I think 165, I think is 175 for including playoffs. You shouldn't have to worry about it for another half a decade if he stays healthy. The only guy behind his brother and Brett Favre that have started more games. So people don't realize, their organization with quarterback problems literally every year. And that, when you're playing a team like that, as the quarterback goes in the organization, so does the organization go, I believe.
And really quick, you mentioned Eli Manning's starting streak. Eli Manning dealing with a back issue,
yeah,
but is practicing right now as we speak. I know some of the media was reporting that after the game, like, he spent a little bit more time in the trainer's room than normal dealing with a back issue, but all systems go, expecting to start against Washington, and is working out today. Mark Herzlich dealing with a concussion, but will work today. No James Brewer because of a concussion. No Jameel McClain because of a knee, is expected to work on Thursday. And no Jaquan Williams because of a concussion and a shoulder. Also, as Roman had noted a little bit earlier in the show, Kennard, first New York Giants rookie to be named NFC Defensive Player of the Week. And two sacks last week, actually four sacks the past two games, which is pretty amazing. And last but not least, the U.S. Marines Toys for Tots collection is going to be outside the gates this Sunday. So if you are planning on heading to the Giants game, by all means, please bring a toy for Toys for Tots. And they'll have little bins outside the stadium when you walk up, and you could place your toys in those.
And make sure the toys are unwrapped. I know that's a big issue. They want to make sure. So they could – this is for ages 3 to 8, this for eight, whatever. You know, so they have to make sure the toys are unwrapped. I'm actually going to a Christmas party, and I have to bring an unwrapped toy. I remember last year, like, wrapping it and thinking I was doing a good job. And they're like, no, you're supposed to unwrap, leave it unwrapped. So make sure the toys are unwrapped. There are a lot of people, military families and the like, that need toys this time of year.
201-939-4513 is the phone number. Again, 201-939-4513. Let's kick it off with David calling in from the Bronx. David, welcome.
Hi there, Anita. Hey there, Roman.
How we doing, Dave? How you doing? What do you got, Dave?
My thing is this. I do not like, now after viewing him, I do not like Tom Coughlin as a coach. I wish they would get rid of him. The owner, Jim Mara and Mr. Tisch, said to this man, because of the advent of Gerald Jernigan's breakout, and we need to get the young guys on the field much earlier. Now, he's put the young guys on the field now because he doesn't have a choice. We got so many injuries. But we got one young guy, Corey Washington, who has already shown a pattern of being similar to Victor Cruz, being a great find like Victor Cruz. And he's languishing on special teams.
What specifically is your point?
Thanks for the phone call.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. We lost him.
It's okay. He was just
venting,
disappointed in Tom Coughlin. And it seemed to me like he wants to see some of the young guys. Here's a tweet just to kind of piggyback on that. And this is from classic New York Giants fan. Eli shouldn't be finishing up games. That's why we have Nassib. You know, obviously Giants 4-9. Eli now dealing with a back issue. And again, nothing serious. But I still want to see Eli Manning play. I mean, what's your thoughts? Would you, the last three games, would you like to see Nassib get in and get some time?
You know, and again, and I sound like a broken record when I say this. The coaches are paid and have the autonomy to make those decisions. And I know fans have a right to vent and show their frustration and give their opinion on the situation just from what they see. And fans are major stakeholders in this whole process in terms of tickets and fantasy football and all the things that fans support that make this league, this game great, this game that I was a part of for 12 years of my life. But everyone loves the backup quarterback. Everyone loves the second guy. I play with a guy by the name of Charlie Whitehurst, who's in San Diego. And
Charlie checked down Whitehurst.
Checked down Whitehurst. And Charlie was, you know, he grew his hair out. I think he was like, I mean, he's a third quarterback for the Tennessee Titans, ironically. And he, you know, he was the backup that never got on the field because Phil Rivers was the guy. Went up to Seattle, signed a big deal when he hadn't started. Didn't pan out. and then he's a backup again. And I think sometimes circumstantially, if you're a good quarterback, you will get your shot. You will get your shot one way or the other. And you've seen second string guys come in and start for 4 or 5 games and get a big contract. You've seen them take those contracts and not do well. You've seen a lot of things happen, but let me just keep reiterating the fact that this thing isn't about getting someone more playing time. It's about winning. Winning on the basis of trust in the coaching staff, knowledge of the system, whether it's offensively, defensively, and an ability to show that you can get on the field and execute the concepts of what's worked during the week. Some of these guys have to take written tests before each game, maybe the Thursday or Friday of the game. And if they're not doing those things well, they're not going to play. And I don't know where these guys are, the written test. I don't have that kind of intimate knowledge. But, again, you got 3 rookies that are contributing to, on this draft class right now. Andre Williams, Odell Beckham, and Devin Kennard, who's come out of nowhere and become NFC players. That's 3 rookies out of this draft class. Kerry Wynn, an undrafted rookie that made the team over what's the guy? I was going to say Idris Elba, but the guy was at Chicago Bears. Israel Adonijay, who made the team over this guy, who was a solid veteran, just like Colin Jenkins and Rocky Bernard, all these guys that this team has kept. And he's shown some promise. He's shown some flashes. So, and then Demontre Moore is at least starting to take a turn to somewhat. So, but, you know, we're still complaining about Ryan Nassib, or somebody's going to call about Corey Washington. 3 rookies on this draft class are playing and contributing and show promise for what they can do in 2015. That gives me optimism if I'm a Giants fan of what this team can do and what's happened as a result of injuries. But again, I just give my opinion based on 12 years in the NFL, but maybe that doesn't mean anything to some people because I still get attacked on Twitter for my comments. Go ahead.
Again, 201-939-4513. With you till 1 o'clock Eastern Time, Anita Marks, Robin Oben. You are watching Big Blue Kickoff Live. Also, hit us up on Twitter. Make sure you include that hashtag Giants Chat. Here's one from Steven who says, you people are absolutely crazy. Who are you replacing Tom Coughlin with? He's a great coach, and it would be a mistake to let him go. I have to say I totally agree with that. I personally don't feel that the issues here are because of Tom Coughlin. I think far from it. I've been covering this team now 5 years. You've been covering it even longer than I have. And Tom Coughlin has not lost his locker room. In fact, all the guys in that locker room look at Tom Coughlin as a father and want to perform and want to win football games for him. But with that being said, listen, I covered the Miami Dolphins through their tenure with Don Shula, Dave Wannstedt, Nick Saban. After Nick Saban, Cam Cameron.
Yeah.
Who are you like?
Tony Sperano. Well, you were in Baltimore by then.
Yes, but still, I mean, just, you know, covering a team. And then in Baltimore, when I arrived in Baltimore, it was Brian Billick and then made the switch to Harbaugh. And let me tell you something. Those players had a really, really hard time transitioning.
It was Club Med with Brian Billick.
Oh, it was. It was Club Med with Brian Billick. And then Harbaugh came in, and he leads with a very strong fist. And it took a while. I mean, there was some pushback with Ed Reed and Ray Lewis and Chris McAllister at the time who was there. And I really do believe, and you know Jonathan Ogden extremely well. Mm-hmm. I was hosting I'll never forget this. I was in Arizona, Giants, Patriots. That Arizona game, Jonathan Ogden and I were hosting Radio Row for the entire week, and when news broke that it wasn't Jason Garrett, that it was John Harbaugh who was coming in to coach the Ravens, I think that sealed the deal.
And for his retirement.
For his retirement.
Yeah, I know.
Because he said, listen, I could play 75% with my toe and probably be better than 95% of most of the linemen in the league, but I just don't know if I want to put myself through that type of camp. I don't know if I want to put myself through that type of head coach. Doesn't make him a bad head coach. It's just, you know, just lead with a different philosophy. And sometimes it's a hard pill to swallow for a lot of these guys who've got accustomed to a certain way of doing things.
Yeah, and then you had and I did a coaching internship that summer of 2008 when John Harbaugh first got there and that staff. And, you know, we're talking about the Ravens, but just to make the point that in terms of coaching changes and coaching philosophies. And I remember Trevor Price being on that team, and he was, like, really fearful of that, you know. But every third day, if you were over 30 years old, you didn't have to practice. So he did some things to the veterans, and I think – but just fans always have to expect when when you get rid of a head coach, the next guy that comes in is always the exact opposite. So I saw it go from Dan Reeves, who I played for 1 year, my rookie year, Jim Fossil, then you come in with John, and you come in with Coach Coughlin. Whenever Tom Coughlin is ready to retire or whatever, I'm pretty sure the next guy would be maybe a younger guy or whatever, 42-year-old guy out there, whoever's out there, I don't know. But just teams as a whole sometimes always go – I mean, look at Atlanta. They had Jim Mora Jr., then they go to Mike Smith. And so it's always like the older guy, the leader, then you got the younger guy who's more energetic and talk to younger players, then you get the older guy. I mean, it's like that around the league. But, again, you have to have the respect of an organization that I think I can say that I understand – how this organization values head coaching and the type of people that would come here and coach this team. And that list of people is less than a handful of people that could do it in this organization. And Tom Coughlin is leads that list. I'm saying Tom Coughlin versus whoever could be out there. I mean, this team isn't going to hire some mystery. You're not going to get the guy, Brian Kelly, in Notre Dame. It's not going to be, you know, some. I mean, Tom Coughlin is still better at 4-9 and 7-9 last year than a lot of candidates that are out there, in my opinion.
201-939-4513. We're going to go to a caller out of Philadelphia, and I so apologize if I'm pronouncing your name wrong, but it's
Esosh?
There you go.
Esosh?
How are you doing today, guys?
How do you spell your
How do you pronounce your name?
Enoch.
Enoch.
That was an
okay.
S there.
All right. Well, welcome.
Are you West African?
Thank you.
Are you West African?
Yes, sir.
I knew it. I'm from Cameroon. That's why I knew the name. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's okay.
This isn't a history class.
I got a few topics to talk about. I know people don't want to see Tosman go, but this season, we had a bad season this year. But I think the problem with us this year is the training staff. Whoever is hiring the training staff, we got to get a new training staff because everybody keep getting injured. Not like this whole defense. Like, why we pay Kamari all that money? He get beat on every play. We get him all. The Eagles didn't want him. Obviously, the Broncos didn't want him. And we got him. And he's just eating all this money. He's not producing at all. And y'all think, I think, if he wasn't a rookie, he was going to go to the Pro Bowl this year. Odell Beckham, I think he should win Rookie of the Year. That's just me.
Okay.
And I don't
okay.
know why Jesse Pierre-Paul playing like this. He got to go. We can't keep him this year. We should go after Don Sassou. That's who the Giants should get from the Lions.
Hey, thank
I'm just crushing my thing.
Thank you so much for the phone call. Two quick points I'd like to make in regard to what the caller just shared with us. Number one, Cromartie has been unhealthy the entire second half of the season.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy who's like literally just hobbling around here.
Back, shoulder, knee, IT band.
During the week.
Hip.
So yeah. I'm not going to criticize his style of play. On top of this, this is a secondary that's so been depleted because of injury that, I mean, can you really grade this secondary? I mean, he's really – him and Roll are really
– the only two mainstays of the secondary.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about Prince Amukamara, Tremaine McBride – I'm sorry, before him. Prince Amukamara, Walter Thurman, and then Tremaine McBride. So you're losing all three levels of a starter, a slot guy who could play as a starter if the guy goes down, and his that third slot guy. I mean, when you're saying we miss Tremaine McBride, I mean, that shows how injured. Nothing against Tremaine McBride, but when you're saying you miss Tremaine McBride, I mean, that's when you know that this defense is depleted.
And another comment I wanted to make in regard to all the topics that he brought up was Sue and the fact that he is going to be a free agent. Word is that there's going to be a ton of teams that are going to throw him a ton of money. And this is I want to kind of throw this back at you in regard to, because this is a debate that I've had with a number of NFL analysts around the league, and that is when you're talking about that type of money to spend on a player, it's either corner, left tackle.
Right defensive end.
Or quarterback.
Quarterback, yeah.
Quarterback, tackle, offensive tackle who's going to protect your quarterback's blind side, or cornerback. That is where you spend that type of money. Do you agree or disagree?
I agree, and I would put a 3B under a defensive end, right defensive end, a guy who can get a lot of sacks. Look, this is an era where you're drafting offensive guards in the top five in the NFL draft. So a defensive tackle is – I mean, look, if you're the best at your position, you deserve to get paid the most. I mean, that's just the market value. But Ndamukong Suh is going to demand somewhere south, slightly south of what J.J. Watt's got. And I just don't think the Giants would put that big of a burden on the cap.
J.J. Watt's an end.
And he's versatile. He could play inside, outside. And that's why I said somewhere south of what J.J. Watt – I mean, you're talking a $100 million contract. So I don't know if that gets swallowed by the Giants at the expense of – I think Antoine Roll, Prince, obviously, JPP. I mean, there are a lot of decisions that have to be made. I mean, that's one player against three guys. And right, wrong, or indifferent. And the reason I mentioned the fact that this team could be 7-6 right now, it really shows you that despite the injuries, despite the things that have happened, this team has been in a position to win. And I think there have been two or three players away from making that home run. You know, if Prince is on the field, if Prince and Tremaine McBride, I keep saying Tremaine McBride, if Prince and Thurman are on the field in that Dallas game, does Dallas score that last touchdown? If the 49ers game, I mean, if Cruz is on the field to compliment Odell Beckham, I mean, they're both every week, 5 catches, 80 yards, 6 catches, 90 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 touchdown. And then Reuben Randall becomes a slot guy and he's catching everything. I mean, that makes a difference. So I don't think in terms of, wholesale changes. I mean, we saw the Redskins for 10 years sign $100 million contracts to free agents every year, and they still have no Super Bowls. But, the irony that Giants are playing the Redskins this week. So the philosophy, I go back to this organization, the philosophy of this organization has never been to get some $100 million guy, one big major free agent signing, off the street and to help bolster this team and take him over the hump. It's never about one guy in football. Never.
Hey, I want to remind you, listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy site, where it's like a new season every time you play. So hurry, get free entry into the $100,000 football contest this weekend. $100,000.
That's a lot of money.
It's a great shopping spree, especially around Christmas time, where first place takes home 10 grand. Head to DraftKings.com now and enter the code BLUE to play for free. DraftKings.com. Bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter BLUE for a free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. Side note, tomorrow night I have an appearance at the Garden State Plaza Mall.
I know what that is.
For Pandora. See this?
Yeah.
So Pandora signed a deal with the NFL, and so they make the NFL charms. So I'll be there from 6 to 8, the Garden State Plaza Mall. Folks want to come out. And
will you give me your autograph if I come up to the table?
Stop it. But isn't this a great Christmas present?
Yeah, those are cool.
Right?
And they can make them in different things.
Make any NFL team. Any NFL team that you like. But obviously you want to join.
But they're only for women, right?
But but you buy it for your wife or your girlfriend or, your sister. Or
hopefully not both.
Or your daughter. Whatever. Well, I didn't go there. But anyway. If you're around the Garden State Plaza Mall, you want to come out and say hi, please do. I'll be there from 6 to 8 tomorrow. And also, in regard to DraftKings, fantasy football, we're now into the playoffs.
Right.
So last week was like the first round of the playoffs, so probably a lot of people lost. But what's so great about DraftKings is that you can continue to play each week, even though you might have lost your fantasy league. This is week to week.
I think you're going to have to take me on the chalkboard and actually
and
spoon feed it to me as if I was a third grader.
Fantasy football?
Yeah. Like okay. I might just pay you for your time to just.
Maybe we'll do that. Maybe we'll do that at lunch today. 201-939-4513. Let's head out to Staten Island. Steve is standing by. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hey, Anita. How are you today?
Fantastic.
What's up, Roman? How are you?
Good, welcome. Steve.
Okay, hey, listen, I want to run something by you. Out here in our local papers, right, one of the papers, they were talking about Antoine Roll and how the Giants should cut ties with him because of his behavior and, what he did Sunday. And I got to tell you something. I hope the Giant organization keeps him for a long time. All right, I'm an old-school Giant fan, and I got to tell you, I love defense. And this guy, if you look at the way he plays and you listen to him talk in his interviews – He's playing like this team is still fighting for a playoff spot.
Yep.
And I like that. I like a guy that wears his heart on his sleeve and still makes every tackle count. And as far as I'm concerned, and Roman, you probably know, because I'm sure you've seen this in your career, this was 7 weeks of losses pent up that he just wanted to get out of his system. And I totally understand what he did, and I'm 100% okay with it.
Well, I think in terms of, and thanks for your call, Steve, I mean, I think in terms of just passion, energy, and you talked about that Giants pride, wearing your heart on your sleeves, I mean, you need 11 non-troll roles out there on defense. I mean, at this team's worst moments, 0-6 last year, losing 7 straight, he's consistently been the guy that has really been a light on that defensive team. He's always coming up with big hits and tip balls or, I remember at a point where he drops the interception against the Cowboys, and he's like, oh, had he not dropped that interception? Well, he was in a position to make an interception, and you hope that the other 10 guys should have been in a position to make a play, so you're not criticizing him for dropping an interception that could have won the game. But again, I have nothing but respect for Antoine Roll and just what he means to this defense, this team, and the Giants community.
I've known,
and I know you're good friends with him. Yeah.
Well, I've known Antoine Roll because I'm from South Florida, so I covered Antoine Roll when he played football down in South Florida in high school, as well as the University of Miami. I know his family extremely well. He comes from a phenomenal family down there. And one thing about Antoine Roll is he had immense success in high school. Played on a high school team down in South Florida that won all the time. He played at the U when the U was winning football games all the time. And this is just – this is a man who doesn't accept losing. Now he knows what it is to lose, but he doesn't like it. It doesn't sit well with him. And I think a lot of that has to do with where he was raised, how he was raised, the football teams that he grew up playing on, the guys that he grew up playing with. And so there's a swagger there. There's an ego there. There's a mentality there. And he's had it since I've known him, since my aunt was his English teacher.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, that's how far back I...
That's in the family right
yeah,
there.
Yeah. So anyway, he's a fantastic guy. Now with that being said... he's the kind of guy that you want on your football team. He's the kind of guy that you want in your locker room. But with that being said, you know, he's coming towards the end of his career. He's got maybe just a few years left. This very well could be his last deal, his last mega deal in the NFL. And I do believe that there's going to be some teams that are going to come knocking.
Teams that want that leadership and seeing what he's done. And I think a lot of teams, you know, I think because I played on 4 different NFL teams, you know, there is a perception out there that if you can play for the Giants at a high level and you can deal with the media, deal with the scrutiny, and deal with playing in a market that has, you know, 20 million people, you can certainly go to a blue-collar town, if you will, and do well in that environment.
Right.
It's always the other way. You can deal well in that smaller town or whatever, but, you know, can you play in New York? I mean, I would always get players asking me, what's it like to play in New York, man? What's it like to go to a restaurant and you run into Bruce Willis, the next day it's Puff Daddy, next day it's somebody else, or I mean, all that stuff is fluff. I mean, because I think you kind of get used to that here, but again, there are different things you have to deal with mentally. But again, Antoine Roll has thrived in an environment that has a lot of successful people, a lot of high pressure, dealing with the media all the time, constantly speaking for the defense, sometimes even speaking on just behalf of the team. And, I mean, he's obviously said some things over the course of his career that, you know, may rub people the wrong way, whether it's fans or his own players in the locker room saying we need toughness, we don't have any fight, things like that. But I don't think I'd change anything, and I don't think Antoine Roll would either.
My biggest question to you would be, how's the media?
Here?
If I was a player who was thinking about coming to New York and I was picking your brain, I'd probably ask you, how's the media?
I'd tell him it's brutal. I said, you better be ready for it because there's it's just the multiple news outlets, and I tell people it's like, I mean, I remember going to the Super Bowl was just not that big of a deal because I would see like Paul Schwartz. I'd see all these people that I'd see in New York all the time, and I wasn't overwhelmed by how much media is at the Super Bowl because you almost see, to a smaller degree, you see that all the time in the locker room, after a game, lunchtime. I mean, constant news stations, everybody.
Fans need to understand, you know, you go play for another team like Carolina or like Tennessee.
I left here and went to Cleveland.
Oh yeah. So any well, not in Cleveland now, but any given day in a locker room, maybe you're lucky if you have seven reporters in there.
Yeah.
Here at the Giants, every day you've got 20, 25.
Yeah.
It's insane. It's just a totally different animal for players that play in of course the Big Apple. 201-939-4513. Let's continue with our calls, Roman. We go to Jeff in Rhode Island. He wants to talk about Odell Beckham Jr. Jeff, welcome.
Hi, good afternoon, Anita and Roman. How are you today?
Hey, Jeff.
Good. We all want to see, everybody wants to see the Giants win their remaining games, even though it's a lost season. My question is this. I have to question the need to have Beckham Jr. back there on punt returns. It seems to me that going forward, he's going to be our most valuable offensive asset next to Eli, and I just really don't see the need to have him back there returning the punts with these three games remaining, because, you know, in the context that it's going to be a losing season anyway. But, you know, I know every coach, and I know Coach Coughlin wants to win every game, and I want to see the Giants win every game, but I have to question the risk factor in putting him back there. So I'll hang up and I'll listen to your response. Thank you and have a good day.
Thanks, Jeff. And I know that this criticism has been said a lot in terms of you go from not using enough to you got to find other ways to use him to now it's, oh, let's not put him on punt return. We don't want him to get injured because he's the future. So it's funny just in a six-week span, this progression that he's made in terms of fans now fearing for his safety in terms of, like, doing special teams. You were right, Jeff. I think they find creative ways for him to get on the field because he's so explosive. But I don't think he's being overused. You know, and every time you go out there, you always cross your fingers and you hope everyone gets healthy and, you know, finishes the game strong. This team has certainly seen its share of people on IR, on injury reserve, or people just missing games due to multiple things. But again, yeah, that's fair criticism. I mean, I don't, but I think you can't approach it from a place of apprehension, because then you shouldn't be out there on the field to begin with. I mean, if you got a punt coming down, you got these guys running, now they have these chips on their, these guys running, what, 20 miles an hour or 15, whatever it is, that they mark now on people's shoulder pads. You can see how fast they're running. You got to want to do that. And if you're, I shouldn't be doing this, I should save it for all. You can come across the middle, get hit, and get in. I mean, you can.
Well, I don't think any of that could happen. That's not his mentality, of course.
But I'm saying, like, I'm just seeing it's the irony of from that Atlanta game to, okay, yeah, we got to get him more. Now, I mean, fans, not me, but fans. Let's put him on punt return. He's got to run some reverses
also,
too. He's got to now. It's let's not let him do that because of how good he's doing on offensive downs.
But also keep in mind, you know, how many games he missed at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, and you can't make up for those losses. But again, you can just maximize the time that he's gotten and try to find creative ways for him to be successful.
And also, you know, there is a rookie wide receiving battle that's going on in the NFL right now. Kelvin Benjamin, Sammy Watkins, Mike Evans, Jordan Matthews, Jarvis Landry, John Brown, Brandon Cooks, who unfortunately is on IR already with the New Orleans Saints. But it's unbelievable. I mean, this year to me, unbelievable, the rookie class of wide receivers. And we talked about it. We kind of had a feel that the rookie class of wide receivers was going to hit this. But taking this seriously, taking this league by storm this season, it's been, and Odell's at the top of that list.
And it's funny, and you can Google the 1996 wide receiver class. I was in 96 draft class, and that's still considered the best draft class receivers ever. Because you had like 10 guys literally that had.
Want me to call it up?
Yeah, pull it up. And just from the top of my head, Amani Toomer, Marvin Harrison.
The 86 or 96?
96. I'm not that old. 1996 receiver draft class. I mean, it has its own Wikipedia if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it does. I'll call it up.
That's NBA. I think that you got NBA. I mean, Amani Toomer, Joe Horn, T.O., Marvin Harrison, Eric Molds. I mean, there's
like, Keyshawn. Okay,
Keyshawn,
so here we go. Keyshawn Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Terry Glenn.
Eddie Kinnison.
Yeah, Marvin Harrison.
Marvin Harrison, wow. Okay.
Eric Molds.
Eric Molds, Buffalo.
Yeah. Amani Toomer.
Amani Toomer.
Mushi Muhammad. I forgot about him. Carolina, longtime player.
Yep.
Bobby Engram. I mean, and the average guy.
Chicago, right? Chicago.
Yeah. Derek. I mean, the average guys in that draft played 10 years and produced on their respective teams. I mean, T.O., I was a third-round pick.
T.O.?
T.O. got drafted after me. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of. Reggie Barlow was a punt returner on our Tampa Bay team.
Joe Horn.
Yeah, Joe Horn. A lot of guys. I mean, I think the guys that are Jermaine Lewis, you know him from Baltimore, returning a kickoff for a touchdown in the Super Bowl. I mean, there's a lot of guys, and I think the guys that are highlighted, not a lot of guys at the bottom.
I'm looking at this list, and I'm saying, yes, you're right, but it took like a good 2-3 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
For all those wide receivers that we just mentioned to really kind of make a name for themselves.
Right.
All these rookie wide receivers, Roman, are making a name like right now. First of all, I know you don't play fantasy, but like all these guys are owned in fantasy. I mean, and they're hot commodities. I mean, they're putting up great numbers, not only for fantasy teams, but also for their teams as well.
Now, let's have this discussion.
Benjamin.
Let's have this discussion,
catch a
Anita.
Football. Yeah.
Is that a result of the new rules? The fact that these kids are now doing 7-on-7 tournaments since high school? That they're more NFL ready than they were, 10, 15 years ago. I mean, I think that has to be a part of the discussion.
Absolutely.
Now, these guys
are,
they're still phenomenal talent, but this new NFL that's very offensive friendly has enabled, I think, a lot of these rookies to come in out the gate and do extremely well. I mean, even some of these tight ends are doing well also because of when you can come across the middle and not be afraid that you're going to get blasted by a safety or a linebacker. I played in the era of Ike Hilliard and Wayne Corbett, and they took the hits. They got up and gave the ball back to the official, and no flags were thrown. So, obviously, you had – these kids are better athletes now. They're training. They're all jacked up. I mean, but I think you could also say you had better, tougher football players because you didn't see as many concussions and some of those things that – I mean, a guy gets hit, he's going to the locker room. He might be done for the game. He has to beg to come back, but it's after a string of tests. So – some of those things, you know, I've seen guys suffer because of that, because they kept playing. And you hear about Wayne Corbett and some of these guys that have had some of these lingering issues because of all the hits they took. I mean, you talk about this organization, Chris Callaway always came across the middle, always got blasted. I mean, just defenseless hits after defenseless hits. So I think the league has done a good job in protecting the defenseless player, but it has birthed the ability for some of these young guys to come in out the gate and just have these great numbers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, Roman Oben, Anita Marks with you for Big Blue Kickoff Live, with you for another 15 to 20 minutes. So by all means, please, if you want to jump on board, 201-939-4513 is the phone number. Talking all things Big Blue as they get ready to take on Washington. Let's talk about the three remaining games on the schedule. Washington, who's 3-10, the Rams, who are 6-7, who've just been playing phenomenal defense.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness, the past few weeks. Unbelievable. And they are at the Rams and then home against Philadelphia to end the season. Now, this is where it really gets interesting. You've got the Cowboys and the Eagles going up against each other on Sunday night. This is a must-win game for the Cowboys because the Eagles beat them on Turkey Day, right? We're talking about, of course, the battle of that NFC East division. So let's say, hypothetically speaking, Dallas does beat them, and now they're 1-on-1 in the division. The Cowboys still have Indianapolis. I think that's a worthy opponent and could be a good game. And then they finish off at Washington. And even though Washington is 3-10, and they are what they are, Washington always steps up to the occasion because it's the Dallas Cowboys and you know the rivalry that exists there. Now, with the Eagles go to Washington and play Washington. And then, as I said, they finish up against the Giants. So the Giants very well could be spoilers in that Week 17 game. How do you think this, based on now, you kind of know who everybody's playing, and how do you think this this pans out for everyone?
I think the criticism out there that was saying that could the train be slowing down for Dallas because – now they're getting that schedule that the Giants got in the middle of the season. I mean, everyone plays the same teams now, so in the division. That's why I think when the Giants played the Cowboys, they said this is the most important game for the Giants season because if they don't beat the Giants, I think they played the 49ers the next week. They had the Eagles on Thanksgiving. I mean, they could end up losing three straight. The Cowboys may not make the playoffs this year if they don't manage these last 3 weeks well, and if Philadelphia starts winning. And obviously, they play each other on Sunday night. I still think Philadelphia is the class of the division, if you will. But I think Dallas could find themselves in a dogfight at that sixth seed, or maybe not making the playoffs. But then if the Giants beat the Eagles at the end of the season, that would obviously help Dallas as well.
Yeah. Again, Dallas and the Eagles, and then you've got Green Bay and Detroit battling out in that division as well. Green Bay, 10-3. And then, of course, you have Arizona, Seattle, and the San Francisco 49ers. And Seattle's been playing amazing football as of late. It's going to be an interesting game this week as well. 49ers heading to Seattle. Colin Kaepernick has just looked horrible as of late. That offense is sputtering. Can the 49ers defense do what they need to do to try to keep that team in the game against Seattle? Denver going up against San Diego this week, which is a good one. Cincinnati at Cleveland. And, of course, news yesterday, that Cleveland is going with Johnny Manziel as their starting quarterback should be interesting. The Texans at the Colts. That's going to be a good one. And, of course, the Dolphins at the Patriots. This is a must-win game for the Miami Dolphins in order to stay relevant in that AFC playoff.
Yeah, and obviously the league has done a lot in terms of making sure the games are interesting at the end of the year. Like the last two or three seasons, we've seen these coming down to the wire divisional games that could determine the whole thing. And even the last 3 weeks, when you see these playoff those preliminary playoff pictures, you're seeing a team go from in the hunt to that fifth, sixth seed, and vice versa. You've seen a team go from the sixth seed or a division leader to in the hunt. So I think this week in particular will determine a lot, specifically with that Dallas and Eagles game. And then I'm sure you know about yesterday with Cam Newton.
With Cam Newton, yes. Thank goodness. Word out of Carolina is that Cam Newton is going to be released from the hospital today. His injuries from that horrible car accident, and of course pictures were all over social media, two broken bones in his back, very similar to what Tony Romo had suffered and was able to play through. But everything that we're hearing out of Carolina is that more than likely Cam Newton will not suit up and play this week. It means that Derek Anderson, DA, will be the starting quarterback for Carolina. But thank goodness, when you saw photographs of that horrible car accident, you know that it could have been a lot worse than it was, and thank goodness it wasn't.
Yeah, and you have to, I mean, in terms of seatbelt safety, I mean, we're not doing PSAs here, but, you know, it's you have to, you know, cross your fingers that your seatbelt and obviously that the car accident wasn't due to any foul play by any means. I mean, you know, Cam Newton he's an ambassador of the league. I mean, we've seen this kid mature each year as a player. And, you know, Dave Gettleman, who's a former Giants, scouting department, is the general manager for the Carolina Panthers. And I think he's kind of brought some of that Giants mystique, if you will, to Carolina with Ron Rivera, head coach who I know from my days in San Diego when he was our defensive coordinator when I was there. So, you know, they've had some issues in that NFC South with the 5-7 leading winners of the division or whatever the record is now. But, again, just from an NFL standpoint, our prayers are with Cam Newton. That are good that he's safe.
And the other news is that Jadeveon Clowney, knee surgery, so he's going to be down for the next 9 months. And there's been so much criticism.
Yeah, microfracture, which I've had that surgery. It does take, you know, seven to 9 months for sure.
And not all players can really come back and be the same and be 100%.
Depending on the position you play, you know, a lineman versus a DB is different than versus a quarterback. I mean, it's versus a running back having that. So it's you really hope that this guy comes back to be 100% because, I mean, number one overall, you've been hearing about him for 3 years. Since his sophomore year, freshman year at Carolina, at South Carolina. So, look, I ran into, I think his name Brian Gaines, who was the assistant GM at Miami Dolphins. He got fired, and, you thought he was going to be the GM. He was actually here, played on practice squad when I was at the Giants, I think my rookie and second year. Goes into scouting, becomes a GM, and he says, listen, you go 2-14 one year, you get Andrew Luck, you go 2-14 the next year, you get Jadeveon Clowney. I mean, it's not, you know, and the Colts solved a 10-year problem. Lucky for them, now it's a 25-year problem. They don't have to worry about the quarterback position for, you know, over two decades.
Right.
But again, Jade, I mean, when you're the number one pick overall, I mean, look at Mario Williams, who's having a great – he's having a stellar career now in Buffalo. But I mean, when you get drafted at that spot, you've got to be considered, you know, the number one, top five of all time in your position. I mean, the bullseye's on you as soon as you get in the league. And, you know, injuries or not, I mean, you just hope this kid can come back and have a successful career. I mean, Keyshawn Johnson was the number one pick overall when I was a rookie in 96. We talked about that rookie receiving core. And, you know, Wayne Corbett became the guy at the Jets, and he ended up having to go to Tampa. Obviously, Keyshawn won a Super Bowl with me in Tampa. But, you know, that number one pick overall, he had a 9-year career, which didn't may or may not have deserved that getting the pick number one overall.
Again, just a reminder, listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy site, where it's like a new season every time you play. Hurry, get free entry into the $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend, where first place takes 10 grand home. How great's that? Head to DraftKings.com now. Enter code BLUE to play for free. DraftKings.com. Bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter BLUE for free entry now. DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. You like that commercial?
Which one?
Where the girl's dancing in front of the guy who's...
Yeah, I love that one.
I knew you would. Again.
Love it.
Oh, my goodness. Again, players are practicing right now as we're coming to you live from the Giants facility. No James Brewer today because of a concussion. No Jameel McClain because of a knee, but is expected to work on Thursday. No Jaquan Williams because of a concussion / shoulder. But Mark Herzlich is working today. To what extent, we'll find out after practice, but he's dealing with a concussion as well. And Eli Manning will work today. He's dealing with a little bit of a back issue. Also, big news for Kennard, and congratulations, the first New York Giant rookie to be named NFC Defensive Player of the Week. 6 tackles, 2 sacks, 1 forced fumble this past week, and last week he had 2 sacks, so good for him. And last but not least, U.S. Marines Toys for Tots collection outside the stadium this Sunday. So if you're heading to the Washington game, please bring a toy. And as Roman alluded to a little bit earlier on in the show, make sure it is unwrapped. Very important that the gifts are unwrapped so that they can distinguish what age group that gift can go to.
Yeah, and then we probably need to spend a few minutes just again on the Redskins, the Giants' opponent this week. You know, their other side of the ball. We know about the quarterback controversy and is it – RG3, McCoy has an injury, and obviously
who would you like to see? Are you kind of, would you like to see RG3 and see what
I'd like to see RG3 because, yeah, you know, just
same here.
Again, a high draft pick. You're talking here Andrew Luck coming out, and you almost feel bad for the kid that he's had all these issues, and you're saying, I mean, if it doesn't pan out for RG3, and I think he's got some accelerated, you know, $18 million he's got to make in March, or they've got to decide something to do with him in March. It's bad for the league when you draft a guy that high and he just doesn't pan out, and that becomes a 10-year problem again for the Redskins, and who's worked their way up, or actually worked their way down to be in a position to get that. I mean, what they traded away to get RG3 at that spot was again, that could affect this
team.
It was
a lot.
Yeah, it affects them for the next 7-8 years. And you know, DeSean Jackson did not play last week. He was injured. So if he comes back, that gives him a different dynamic. Pierre Garçon, as you know, I mean, since coming over from Indianapolis Colts, he's pretty much been the most consistent receiver on the team. I mean, I know you got Snorris Moss, an older vet, and you got DeSean Jackson from Philly last year.
This year, though, he hasn't really done much.
I think he leads the team in catches, but it's not dynamic. It's more like he gets fed the ball a lot because there's not a lot of other options.
Prior to DeSean Jackson getting injured, I mean, he was really, you know,
it was he and Snorris Moss were like the 1-2 guy.
The excitement there, and also Jordan Reed, who's been injured on and off, more so on than off with the season so far at tight end. This young man is just so athletic and so exciting to watch. He's finally healthy. So even if, let's say, DeSean Jackson cannot go, and I have a feeling he's probably going to be a game-time decision because mm-hmm. he wanted to go last week and then it just didn't happen, I do believe he'll be a game-time decision. If it's Pierre Garçon and Jordan Reed, careful on Jordan Reed. Don't sleep on that tight end. He's actually quite good.
Yeah, and if you look at their front seven, I think that's really probably the best part of their team defensively. You know, Kernighan, who's having a great year this year. Now, I think he's got like 10 or 11 sacks or something like that. Hatcher, who came from Dallas. And then Baker, the nose guard, are pretty solid. The problems are with the Redskins really in their secondary. You know, Ryan Clark, who was, I think was at Pittsburgh for a long time, You can tell he's getting up there. I mean, he was getting up there in Pittsburgh, and now he's in Washington trying to get that one more burst, that last burst of his abilities in the secondary.
Interesting note on him. You know,
they've given up some yards.
You know, he has sickle cell.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So he's been very limited in regard to the teams that he can play for. Like, you know, he could never play for the Denver Broncos because of the altitude up
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I remember hearing that.
And I want to say, if I remember correctly, there's been some games where he hasn't traveled with the team because he can't even play there.
Wow.
So anyway, but yes, that's why I'm expecting another big game from Odell Beckham Jr. this week against that Washington secondary. I know we've got some callers. Let's head out. I want you to comment on Alfred Morris and what you are expecting from him this week against this Giants defense. But first, let's go to Ernest from Connecticut. Ernest, welcome in.
Hello, it's good to be back with you guys. I want to make a statement or just ask a question about one thing. I'm going to ask you something else. But the first one is, when Eli Manning comes up to the line, you know, when he goes up to the line of scrimmage and make his plays, why is he always distracting himself by trying to put everybody in the right place? Like, these guys are stupid. I mean, he's even done that with the other offense under Gilbride, so it's not that it's something new that he's been doing. You know, he's been in that system for a while. I think that distracts from his concentration from what he has to do when throwing the passes. You know, when he's throwing his passes, because now he has to do all this checking here and checking here like his brother, trying to be like that, and then he has to step back and then try to concentrate on throwing his passes. I think somebody should, you know, somewhat tell him that, and that's why the clock is always running down, you know, so fast, and he's not able to make his reads right. So I think somebody should really check him out, or either tell him or tell somebody to, you know, let him know that these guys are professionals, and when they go in the locker room or when they go to practice, you know, whatever, that those guys should know where they need to be so that he can concentrate on what he needs to concentrate on. The next question is, do you think that they will keep Joan Beeson for the next year?
Ernest, thanks for your phone call. Question in regard to all that. I mean, a lot of times it's not necessarily miscommunication. A lot of time that's Eli Manning calling an audible at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, and then in this offense, you know, you have the play that you get called, but there's always a play that you can audible to. I mean, and then you have audibles that are built in. So you've got two plays. Usually, this doesn't work. This is the complimentary play. And then you have the ability to change that. And Eli Manning, and if one thing that he's good at is he's good in terms of his football acumen at the quarterback position. He's a very smart player, and he can diagnose things very well and very, very quickly. In terms of the
– Thank you.
In terms of the other question about Beeson, I think John Beeson's deal was very cap-friendly. So if they don't feel like he can come back and contribute after yet another surgery or what have you, I think they could part ways with him and not affect the salary cap. But I don't want to misspeak on that because I'm not exactly 100% sure on the intricacies of his contract or what he's due in March or any of that type of stuff. I wouldn't know, but... But I think you would have hoped to get, at the very least from a football standpoint, you would have hoped to get John Beeson to contribute, you know, a lot more than he did. You know, let go from Carolina because of his injuries, that he lost a step. But you know,
listen, beyond,
obviously, when he was at his peak, I think at 80%, John Beeson was still better than, like, a lot of linebackers in the league.
I was just going to say, beyond his contract, I mean, let's just keep our fingers crossed that his toe heals properly and he'll be able to come back and play, period.
Yeah.
Before we sign off, as I said a little bit earlier, I think the one thing that Washington does have offensively that does pose a threat for the Giants' defense is Alfred Morris. I know he scored a touchdown against them the first time he played earlier this year. Your thoughts on the Giants slowing him down or keeping him out of the end zone?
Look, he's got, I think, 899 yards rushing. I mean, he's going to be 1,000. He's number two in the league in rushing, I think. I mean, the Redskins are, I think, 12 offense in the league, and they're seven in rushing, or no, two in rushing. Whatever. I mean, they're top five in rushing because of Alfred Morris. I mean, he's really the only bright spot on that team offensively in terms of the backfield. So you've got to really have sound gap integrity, and that's on Hankins, on Colin Jenkins. You know, you look at now with Mathias Kiwanuka out, you've got DeMonte Moore and these guys that are more pass rushers at this point of their career. So you've really got to control the edges, and I think you might want to send Devin Kennard a few times just to disrupt any of that play action or anything they might do. They're going to have a specific plan for the defense this week, I'm sure, because of how they've been playing. But, I mean, they're definitely going to start by running the ball to really take the mustard off of some of these quarterbacks issues they're having in Washington. So,
and really quick, keep in mind, if RG3 is the starting quarterback, Alfred Morris's numbers are a lot better when RG3 is at quarterback as opposed to Colt McCoy.
Yeah, because you've got to worry about RG3, and then here comes Alfred Morris just running right at you.
Yeah.
Without RG3 in there, that mystique, it's just like when you're playing against Michael Vick. You still got to say, this guy has done it so many times that you got to make sure that you got to force him to make a mistake, force him to throw outside the pocket, force him to do these things that he doesn't do as well. But you do have to do a one eye on RG3, one eye on Alfred Morris when he's in the game. When he's not in the game, you can key in on Alfred Morris and then make a quarterback beat you with his arm.
Hey, we want to thank you so much for spending the past hour with us. Always on Wednesdays, Roman Oven, Anita Marks. As soon as we sign off, we're going to get some grub.
Yes.
And then after that, we head into the Giants locker room. Giants players will be made available to the media after practice, and those interviews will be back up on Giants.com. So make sure you revisit the site. And tomorrow, Roman will be back with Polly Dottino. So make sure you tune in then. Have a great day, everybody.
Well, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
He's got through. 35-30.
What a no punt. Close, intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.